Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Power Your Life show. And it's always a pleasure to be here, and even more pleasurable to have such wonderful guests, and I feel very, very blessed to do so. And today, we have something very different. Well, I want you to think about something for a minute. Many people who are listening have businesses, or whether they're in their own business, or they're working on their own career, or they're working with other people. But not that many people are aware of what it takes to really have a successful family business. And we're really going to explore that a little bit, because that's a challenge. And yet in this economy, more and more people are being incredibly creative, and families have incredible talents together and can do beautifully together if they follow some wonderful guidelines. And here to really teach us how to create successful family businesses is Daphne Mallory, who is an international speaker and a trainer on family business and real community development. She's been featured on the Dr. Oz Show, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and Self Magazine, Women's Day, Essence, Black Enterprise, and so much more. Daphne is also the host and producer of Family Business with Daphne, and she's so passionate about training families, adults, individuals with disabilities, refugees, and other so-called invisible members of communities in leadership and business skills. She has a very interesting background, and she's going to talk a little bit about that. Welcome, Daphne. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm truly honored.
It's actually my honor, because you do something that's very, very unique, and you do it so well. And I believe that it really has stemmed, Daphne, from your background, from what you endured and where you've come from. So let's share that a little bit with our listeners.
Absolutely. We've had two civil wars in my country. I'm originally from Liberia, and before the first Civil War, my parents knew for some reason to get me out of the country. I was the only one able to come out. I was the only one that got a visa. And I was sent abroad to London as a child on my own to live in London. And that was a very traumatic experience. But at the same time, that's really where my entrepreneurial journey began. It was survival mode, basically, and I learned pretty quickly. I didn't know the term of the word, but I certainly understood that the way to thrive, the way to stand out, was creative, be productive, and be a leader. And I think that carried on all the way through to coming to the United States, and I had the privilege to attend Brown University and UNC Chapel Hill Law School, and all the while, I always had this entrepreneurial bug as a means of an immigrant or refugee surviving. And to me, that was my pathway to success. And I've sort of just carried that all the way through my adult life, even when I was practicing law. And finally, today, it's culminating in this work of trying to empower others to also dive in as entrepreneurs, but specifically as entrepreneurs working towards building something that will last with your family and last for generations to come.
Daphne, why did you give up law, or did you give up law?
That's a great question. Everyone is trying to get me back into traditional law.
And I'm not trying to get you back. I think you're exactly where you need to be in terms of the help and service you're doing for others. I'm just curious, and I'm sure our listeners are too, because oftentimes people, that's, you know, people go into that career law and they stay in it and they do very successfully.
They do. They absolutely do. But I found that my legal career, which was very exciting, by the way, I did a lot of business law, but I also did a lot of entertainment law. So I was the one behind the scenes, you know, shopping artists and meeting with record labels and, you know, pitching reality shows, on and on and on. Very exciting. But I knew that my legal training was really meant to just help me be a strategist and a trainer more so than anything. And even today, I definitely utilize my legal background. I do a lot of advocacy, whether I'm sitting on boards or I formed the first senior advisory commission in my city. And so I definitely implement my legal skills. But I know that I was created for something where I can utilize my legal background and authority in some cases, but not really. I'm not the behind the desk person reading contracts or, you know, dealing with cases.
Right. No, I totally get that. And I, again, I think that what you're doing in terms of empowering families and other entrepreneurs is incredible. So let's get to it, because when you and I first met, one of the questions that I had that was foremost in my mind was, how do families work together? Because I love my family, but I don't think that's possible. How do they work together, build a successful business, and not get at each other, kill each other, go, you know, get to a place where they're not speaking with one another? How do they do that and maintain that family relationship as well as the business one?
That's a great question. And do you know that's the number one objection I get to this whole topic of family business?
So I do.
Thank you for the opportunity to address that head on. And so I'll answer first based on what I've heard from so many other families. I get to write a weekly column for Entrepreneur Magazine on this topic of family business. And I've interviewed families that are now in their third, fourth, fifth generation of family business. And these are some of the tips that they've shared with me for the column. Number one, I have learned consistently that communication will destroy a family business, not capital or lack of capital. Money is not the issue. It's communication. And
or
they
lack,
spend up. Yes, I mean, specifically lack of communication. You're right.
Right.
And they do spend a lot of time making sure that they have open and honest communication, whether that involves bringing in outside advisors or counselors, setting aside time on a weekly or even more regular basis. They really do stress communicating well internally and then externally, because you will grow to a point where you have the family and then the non-family members working together. And how do you keep those lines of communications open so there isn't this perception of, oh, yeah, you know, if you're not in a family, forget it. You don't have opportunities here.
Right.
And
you
so
know, I've heard that, too, because I think that, I don't know if there's jealousy about it, but they may feel that they're being treated differently, right?
Yes.
From family members.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do? Because I actually coached a few husbands and wives who are in a business together. What do you do when one of the people is working very hard and is meeting deadlines or whatever, and somebody, and I don't know how else to clarify it, is a slouch, is not doing his or her part?
Yes. I have definitely run into that myself as a trainer and consultant. And what I've seen successful family business owners do is that they have clearly defined written roles and responsibilities. Because sometimes it really is an issue of, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do, and I don't want to jump on my wife's or my husband's turf, and so I don't take action. And, you know, I don't, because I don't know what to do, and I don't know what my parameters are. And so definitely you need to start with clearly written, not just spoken of in the bedroom, but clearly written out roles and responsibilities. And then along with that, you need an accountability system. So weekly your meeting and saying, did we accomplish this? You know, you said you were going to do this or these are your roles. How are you doing? And then you might consider bringing in a third party, an advisor. Some family businesses have family councils where it's a mix of family businesses and non-family business members coming together who are, quote unquote, overseeing the business. That's that additional accountability to make sure that everyone's on task.
Now, have you actually worked with families in that capacity or acted as a consultant, again, to ensure that it runs successfully and they're not tearing each other's hair out and that everybody's performing for the sake of the business? Do
yes,
you do that?
Yes, I do. So my emphasis in terms of consulting is strategic planning. That's where my strength is. And so laying out the vision and the modeling for the business, roles and responsibilities, how are we going to accomplish this and transfer it to the next generation. And that's spelled out there as well as those accountability systems. So some families, I interview and work with and train siblings as well, not just husband and wife teams, but siblings and cousins and intergenerational, you know, aging parents all the way down to grandchildren. And what I have found is we all, because I'm in the family business myself, need an accountability system, and sometimes that has to go beyond the family that's working on and in the business itself.
You know, that sounds important. But let's talk, because I'm actually seeing from one of our listeners who was asking, what's a successful family business? What does it look like? What is it? How do I know when I'm ready to start one? And this is not for me. How do I know when I'm ready to start one that this is successful? Are there specific kinds of examples that you can give that tell people or listeners this is what goes into successful family business?
Yes, absolutely. So I have two models that I'm fond of, and I'm biased towards, of course, because they're in Idaho, where I am. One is the Kyle family, and you've got this married couple. They've been married for 48 years.
Wow.
And in addition to that, their business has been like 45-plus years, and they've transferred their McDonald's franchise to their sons, who are now also working in the business. They've created jobs in the community. But what I love, in addition to all of that, they are the go-to people for community support. So charities look up to them and rely on them for their charitable contributions. And they work together to create jobs, and they have multiple locations throughout southern Idaho.
So
did
they need to be community oriented? Because it sounds like they already know what community is about in terms of building a family community now, Daphne, and then extending it outward to the community at large, right? So
yes,
they
absolutely.
Need.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. No, I'm so sorry. Please go ahead.
No, I'm trying to understand what goes into, you know, what they needed to know, what they knew that other families don't know who are in business in terms of building a community. Because they're built, when you're working in a family business, you're growing that family business and you're bringing in relatives, it's still a community, right? So what do they need?
Yes. So in order to, if I could look at all of the family business owners that I've either worked with or interviewed, is exactly what you said. They have learned, I guess in the corporate world you might call it team building, but for families it's different because you're dealing with family dynamics. So first and foremost, think about how do you build your family from the inside out that culminates in a family business. And so the success traits that I have learned from all of these families is that they really work on the family itself, dynamics, developing the entrepreneurial mindset, making sure that they have the training and skills to pass on leadership as well as develop leadership internally. So it's like you're really working on the family and growing their family, and the mindset, action, skills, motivation, all of those things. And then you're growing it outward into that family business, and then furthermore growing it outward into the community. And it's absolutely a symbiotic relationship between the family business owner and the community. Communities love and want to support family businesses, and family businesses need to rely on the support community, whether it's for purchasing real estate for the next location, finding qualified job workers for your business, us forming strategic partnerships, on and on and on. There really is this symbiotic relationship between family businesses and community, and it starts being developed from the inside out.
Why does the community love family businesses as opposed to any other business?
That's a great question. Yeah, no, that's a great question. Trust. They live here, so they're invested here, as opposed to an quote-unquote outsider. They don't live here. They're just, it's another multinational or extended company. The irony, of course, some family businesses are huge, and I love that. There are some huge multinational family businesses, but a lot of people tend to associate if that family lives with us, they're truly invested, and they truly seek our best interest. That seems to be the attitude that family businesses have described to me in terms of how and why they get community support.
Now, have you run into, because we see this on in movies and on television shows and whatnot, families whereby there's one person or maybe two whose the expectation is that they're going to follow in the family footsteps and be in the business, and they really don't want to, and it causes a lot of havoc. What happens, and have you experienced this? And if so, what do you do?
Yes, so I have interviewed family businesses who have had that quote-unquote issue, and so in some cases, sadly, the family business will fail, it will stop, it will end, and in other cases, they've had other children who have taken on the mantle, and even non-family members who have taken on the mantle of leadership and continued it. What I've heard consistently from parents who are hoping that their family business will transfer to the next generation is they've all said, don't push it. This week I interviewed another successful family business. They have a requirement that their children must work elsewhere for 2 years before they can even think about or apply for a senior leadership position with the family business.
Oh, that's
some people
a great
put
idea.
Formal. Yes, yes. And some people do put those formal mechanisms in, and others just take more of a laid-back approach. You know, they don't make it a big deal. It's not the be-all and end-all if you don't work for the family business. They really try to make it, you know, your choice and not have that expectation. So those are some of the safeguards that I've heard of, have seen, have witnessed.
I would think that that's important, because if you have a family member who really doesn't want to be there and feels forced to do it, what kind of job is he or she going to do, right?
Exactly. And on the other end, though, I've heard of other family businesses where someone wasn't even thinking about it. I'm thinking about a family, fifth generation construction family, where the son was pursuing art and his father was having a lot of trouble with the business. And just out of the sheer love of his dad, went to this engineering firm and turned that whole company around and is now steering it to its 200th year anniversary. So it sometimes
wow.
It goes the other way, too.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's amazing. So let's say some of our listeners may be thinking, Daphne, about starting a family business. And so are there options available for that to happen? And if so, what are they?
Absolutely. There are three typical options, and I'm sure there are more. But the three that I'm most familiar with and I've seen would be, one, for those of you who don't want to deal with trial and error, can explore a franchise system. That is where you're buying into a system that's already there, such as your McDonald's, your Campgrounds of America, your Bright Star Healthcare. Any of those, any franchise system will have land available for you to purchase and or rent, or have systems laid out so that you can just plug right in to the system and get your locally owned and operated version in your community. So So that's one popular option. Many franchises are design and work family businesses. Then you have the other option, which is completely starting from scratch, building something from the ground up, innovating or creating, coming up with a patent or a new way or a new product or service, and starting it from the ground up in your community. Now, I should stress, your community could be your local community where you reside, or it could be your virtual community, or you may decide to start an internationally based business. And then the last model, of course, would be to buy an existing business. If you have the financing and interest in a business and passion for it, you can buy an existing business as a family business. So those are three options that are typical for family business owners.
Daphne, I think it's really important. And again, family business isn't new, but with the spin that you have on it, it can be incredibly successful, especially if they have, I'm thinking, also the outside support that you've described. Tell us, before we have to move on, what is one thing that you want family businesses, or maybe two things that you want family businesses to really pay attention to, not only initially, but throughout the whole process?
Initially, I want you to pay attention to what this means for your family tree. Family business, the reason why it is so difficult is it really is a spiritual journey. You really are dealing with each other on the real. You don't get to hide. You have to face each other, your strengths, your weaknesses on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And when you're business building, everything comes out. So don't just focus on, and the reason why a lot of consultants and services steer clear from family businesses is because you have all of these spiritual and emotional dynamics. You must focus on it. I do a lot of training on emotional intelligence. You have to become an emotionally intelligent family, understanding how to communicate, how to relate to one another, respect one another, all of those things. If you can hone that down, I do believe you will have the wherewithal to make everything else. And
Daphne,
then the second thing, oh, go ahead. Yes.
No, I'm saying we're running out of time here, but so second thing really fast, I don't want to cut you off. I just want to have people know where they can get a hold of you.
Yes, thank you. The second thing, don't buy into the myth that if you have little money, you can do it. You can absolutely do it.
Oh, that's good to know, right? Especially in a challenging economy. Daphne, how can people get a hold of you, get more information about your business, about your blog, and just find out more how you can be a consultant to them?
Thank you so much. My blog is daphnemallory.blogspot.com. I'm also on Facebook, Daphne Mallory ESQ. Make sure you add the ESQ and you can like my page and you can find out lots more tips and strategies as well as I post my radio show and et cetera.
Perfect. And thank you so much. You're filled with information. And even though you're not practicing law, I may contact you for entertainment law. So don't be surprised.
And thank you so much for the opportunity again. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Daphne. Have a blessed day. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. We're shifting gears, and we have someone who is familiar to me because he's been on my TV show, my Power Life TV show, and he's also in this area that where I am in the Tri-State area, Philadelphia, Jersey, Delaware. And he is Stephen DeJoseph, and he's had incredible challenges that he's moved past and has actually done some wonderfully creative stuff. I'm going to say stuff because it's so much. He's an established musician, composer, producer, and a filmmaker. And with passion and partnership, Stephen fashioned an award-winning career and has been a leader in the Tourette's community. His autobiographical film, A Synaptic Adventure, Tourette's and Beyond, won Best Emerging Documentary in 2013 Buck's Fever Film Press. Stephen has appeared on TV, radio, and in the press, openly sharing his experiences with Tourette's, OCD, ADD, and the arts. Welcome, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, Duane.
It'll be nice if I turned you on here, right? We're good. We're perfect. Yes. I want to go back a little bit because I know your journey, but a lot of people don't. And let's just start with when Tourette's and your musical career began. But let's tell people very briefly what Tourette's is all about.
Okay. I'll try to do that in one day or less. okay. So, I mean, generally, Tourette's is diagnosed as primarily a tic disorder, but because it is a syndrome, it has a number of components that are incredibly variable from one individual to another. So what you have is what they call comorbid conditions such as OCD, ADD. I personally worked with a dancer who had both autism and Tourette's. And so, you know, it's a very variable situation, but the primary challenges for many kids and adults is the ticking and the blurting kind of noise making, if you will, you know, sounds. So those are the primary characteristics. And of course, then there's the ever present sensationalism of the aspect of blurting, profane language. So, you know, the thing is, it's only 15% maybe about that of individuals dealing with Tourette's that actually blurt, profane language.
Right. Now, when you actually, early on in your life, you began your musical career, and you talk about Tourette's as the onset of Tourette's as really happening at the same time. My question is, how do they work together, and how has Tourette's really helped you? I mean, you have a special name for it, and I want people to understand that you have turned this around beautifully and made it an incredibly wonderful aspect to all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your saying that. What I want to point out, I think, is in the journey, you know, from childhood, I mean, from the age of 6 to 16, I didn't have any idea what it was. So that gave me, back on it, an opportunity to sort of forge a path, you know, figure out how to work with it, you know, even though it wasn't in my mind that way as a kid, I was just simply trying to go through childhood, you know, and deal with the additional challenges of being noticed. Now, you know, fortunately I'm a performer, so being noticed was kind of good, you know, but really, honestly, but in that period of time, you know, I had several really awesome things. My mom, my dad was generous in helping me find something or helping me get a keyboard, you know, financially. My mom always said she believed in me. You know, she was working with zero information. You know, there was no information that she could even think about trying to find in a way at that time, because we're talking like, you know, 45 years ago. So even though Tourette's was around, it was still a time of in the dark, you know. So in that process, I will say that the support of someone loving me and creative drive were the two things that opened up and turned into whatever it is today for me.
You know, I think that's so important because oftentimes, and it's not just someone with Tourette's, but it could be someone with autism or ADD or anything that's not some, the so-called norm, that oftentimes family members can be embarrassed or just want to sort of disassociate with that. And you had the incredibly opposite experience, which really helped you, like you said, hone your skills. Now, you play so many instruments, right?
Well, I would say, you know, the guitar, the keyboards, piano, percussion are the primary things. I've limited myself because if I took on other things, I didn't feel I could spend and you know, who knows what's going to happen next, though, because the film opened up when, you know, when the, with the advent of iMovie on the Mac, you know, I got very interested in making videos for my music, and I became very, you know, absorbed with that too. So that's, yeah.
Right. So again, you've been really enmeshed in the arts in a very wonderful way, and I think it's fascinating. Tell us a little bit about Synaptic Adventure, and firstly, how it came about, and what is it representative of? I know it is autobiographical, but tell our listeners more in depth about what that is.
Well, it ties in with a little bit of how, you know, things developed for me. I mean, as any artist, musician, any person driven to do something, you know, you get very absorbed in it. So I kind of lived kind of in spite of the Tourette's for a long time, in that I just was, excuse me, focused on becoming an artist and being better, developing a career, all those things that come with it. So it wasn't until a good friend, several good friends, some 20-some years ago, pointed out exactly how they saw Tourette's playing out in my life, in my art, you know, showing up and giving me a certain, they called it unique or stood out. As I began to explore that, the concept and the idea of synaptic adventure came up. You know, the idea that everybody has one, and this particular one, for me, tic being the operative word, is mine, Tourette's. So, and OCD and ADD. So all of those things came into play to create what I call synaptic adventure. And now, did that give you a good idea?
Yeah. But tell people, like you talked about sort of when you were growing up with Tourette's, that you were in the dark a little bit. Well, I mean, I'm not in your shoes, so I'm trying to figure out from my insides how I would feel. If you could describe that a little bit, because I think it's so important that people identify with, you know, with what we're going through, to be able to understand and have more compassion, and also see the courage and the gift and the experience and everything about it.
Well, to be very specific, that was the theme of the film, the short film I made, the 12-minute film, Synaptic Adventure, Tourette's and Beyond. And in the story, my intention was to give the person a sort of point of view experience of this ongoing process of movement and distraction, and obsessing, the challenge to focus, and so the, you know, that can be, you know, throughout a given day, you know, you have cycles, I think, you know, and I think, as I understand with Tourette's, as you grow older, you kind of settle into a process with it. Since it's chronic, where you kind of almost know when things are happening or when they're not going to happen. So, you know, it's almost like being a pro golfer. I always joke about golfing and surfing, because you're kind of like you're playing the ball where it lands. You know, when you have something that's
right.
so visible. You know, so the, you know, the inner process could be as normal as any other person, and yet there's another aspect where you're kind of working with or balancing or managing or directing, if you will, you know, because at the end of the day, you're trying to function. You're trying to do things you want to do. You're working with people or you're working alone. So all those things come into play. Hopefully I'm giving you a clear or an insight to it, you know.
Right.
You know, so when I made the film, it seems that people seem to get the intensity as well as the creativity. That was my goal in it.
Now, how has Tourette's aided that creativity?
As I've learned, I feel immensely. I mean, I think it's anything that one has within their life as an experience for them plays into creativity. Now, what I've noticed in my research is that, it seems as though almost every major individual who's affected human history, that in the last couple hundred years has been dealing with some form of Tourette's, ADD, OCD, Asperger, autism. I just, all these names came up when I searched. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, you know, modern day is just, I mean, it's like crazy. It's like, you know, now how they figure these things out. I mean, I'm assuming that there's certain amounts of historic studies and testing and things they're able to do to bring forth the proposition that these people were dealing with these conditions, and that, in fact, with all these individuals, they had this extreme drive in creative approaches, whether it was politics or art or architecture. Howard Hughes dealt with major OCD. so it, to me, it's like, it affirmed what I always thought from that age of 6 to 16, that there was this major artistic thing that happened along with these conditions, you know, that you deal with.
I think
that was my discovery.
Right. I think it's a great discovery. I also think, Stephen, that the key is rather than to fight it, because if you're fighting, let's say, whatever it is that's your experience, and you're not embracing it so that you can really learn from it and have it help you, if you're fighting it, I believe it actually poses more of a hindrance than a help.
Well, it's interesting because you have as a person with Tourette's, you have a double-edged sword. The movements and the blurting, in social settings and in family settings can be challenging for others, you know, and so it becomes a balance, or what Daphne was speaking about, communication in families.
Right.
That's a very poignant topic there because, you know, a family can either make fun of it or push it away or tell the kid to stop it. I mean, I went through that period because they really didn't know. I come from a South Philly Italian family with very strong observations and very free to tell you. So it was a process for me, you know, of being the individual and also speaking up for myself and saying, you know, it's hard for me because it's difficult. You know, finally, when I was diagnosed and it was called Tourette's, everybody was like, gave a little sigh of relief, but really didn't know what all that meant, you know?
Right. Now, I actually have an experience of working with someone who, a mother of a son with autism, and what her experience was in her family was that they didn't understand his outbursts or his behavior. And what happened was the mother eventually made a little film to help the family really get a sense of what it was like from their perspective. And also it helped the family learn and understand, which I thought was incredible. Because, again, if people don't understand, they're not supporting you, it makes it worse, doesn't it?
It makes it challenging, and you know, in general, that's why I feel very strongly. And whenever I perform and present Synaptic Adventure Live, you know, where I'll show the film and talk and perform. So I stress that creative exploration is a primary key in terms of approaching this. And in fact, what I'm trying to do is come in the door, make the front door the creative part, and the back part is the aspects we have to deal with in this format, you know, with these conditions, under these conditions, you know.
Right.
So finally, you know, there's some mastery of the conditions and not I'm just this condition, you know? I mean, I think that's true of life in general.
I think that, yeah, I think you said that so beautifully. And you know what? I think you have done that. I think the creativity is what sort of screams at me in a beautiful way. And I don't mean screaming in a negative way, but it's just like it's there. It's front and front and center. And it's something that really identifies who you are and what you do. So tell people a little bit about what are some upcoming, I don't know, performances.
Oh, yeah.
What's next for Stephen DeJoseph? Because you don't stop.
Well, thank you for that. There's several things. One, there are upcoming performances if you're in the Philadelphia region. Thursday night, I'm playing it up live in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. On Saturday, I'm playing at Wesley College in Dover, Delaware, if you're down that way. So those are performances coming up. Project-wise, the film is kind of being circulated in the film festival circles all over. That's a process. The second thing we're doing is I'm starting these interviews with people who have collaborated with these conditions, who have become successful along with it. This is very exciting because the first person I'm going to interview is the Simpsons animator, one of the Simpsons animators, Chance Raspberry, who has Tourette's and OCD and has very openly talked about his secret weapon. So it's like a perfect meet, you know. It's a perfect start for the series, you know. So, and then I want to approach several other people, you know, more individuals, people that popped up. I'd love to reach Dan Aykroyd, if he's listening, you know, because he talks about Tourette's, you know, and Asperger. Another gentleman has a show called Barter Kings, Antonio Palazzola. An amazing guy. I mean, like, you know, all during the show, they're referring to his tics in the different ways in which, you know, how they deal with each other in such a beautiful way. It's really, so, you know, I'm very excited about that. So I'm in the process of putting that together.
What's your message, Stephen, to families and to, well, first to families, but then to the community at large who may not understand and really need to understand because otherwise they're stifling some incredible talent and possibilities to not only help individuals grow, but grow our world in some way, in a positive way. What would you say? What would you tell them?
You know, normally, I think, well, there's several things I would say. One is definitely to support and embrace your child, your cousin, your neighbor. You know, if you see these things going on, I mean, when I think back over time, people that I noticed and the various conditions that they were dealing with were similar, you know, and I started to realize that even personalities had things going on along the lines of Asperger and autism, that, and Asperger is a tricky one because the person is so smart and seems so informed, and yet they have a certain challenge in the emotional realm of connecting, you know. So these kinds of things, I think it's really important that people understand the parameters, that, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, which is a cliche, but it's worth, you know, at least read the foreword, you know, before you have, you know what I'm saying? You know, so my message would be, look for the art in the syndrome. You know, that's basically what I've been saying.
Right, and that's also what you do. I mean, that's you live it. You absolutely live it on a daily basis, the art and the syndrome.
We're trying, yes, absolutely.
You're being very modest, Stephen.
Well, I mean, for me, it's been my life is the art, you know, and so and creating and playing music for people. So that's, you know, it's funny. Like I said, when you got the nose on your face, you know, you don't notice it until other people bring it up. And I'm so grateful individuals helped me understand that there is a real art in this syndrome. And so that's exactly what I wanted to what I want to say. That's right. And I also, I definitely want to mention the website, of course, synapticadventure.com, which is S-Y-N-A-P-T-I-C, synapticadventure.com, or it's my name, Stephen D. Joseph. You know, when you sign up there, you can actually get a link to the film. You know, it takes you inside and you can see the film. And so that is like really the primary thing that I'm trying to say. Take a closer look.
Take a closer look and just don't look with your eyes and look with a sense of judgment, but really look beyond that too, because what you find are such is what can amaze you in a very positive way. Stephen, you amaze me, and I'm so glad
thank
that you
and
I
me too.
Met. And I
yeah,
have an
thank
idea.
You for, thank you for.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you for your amazing work, Power Your Life. I think it's great, and you guys deserve to be seen all over the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. So we'll get the word out. I also have some ideas when you're working with other people with Tourette's, because I get excited, and you know what my background is in working with children with autism and teaching that at Temple University. And so we'll have some brainstorms and collaborations. Lots of success to you as always, and thanks for sharing your time with us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Joanne. Have a great day.
Thanks, Stephen. You too. Take care. It's amazing. We have such amazing people here. And I really, as I said to Stephen, I'm really very blessed to know these people and to have met people, because I think that not only does it help me become a better person, but it also just expands and extends the understanding that we have for one another on this. And I think that's so important on this planet. Next Wednesday, March 25th, we're taking another shift here, and we have Sue, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, Sue Ingbritson, who is going to talk about healing from the inside out, from chronic illness to chronic wellness, and just the triumphs of what people go through, and Eric Tusci, from trauma to triumph. And these two women have incredible stories. And again, I think that when you hear the stories of how people have moved through their challenges and emerged in such wonderful ways, it's not only inspiring, but it helps us grow and it helps us be strong. So I hope that you will remember how special you are and that you have the ability to power your life each and every day. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to Joanne, that's Joanne, at docwhite.org. We'd love to know what you want to hear on the show. Also, check out my YouTube channel for Power Your Life. You'll see some amazing people, celebrities, guests who, again, are empowering people in so many different ways, art, science, music, life. And remember that you are very, very special, and you have the ability to make wonderful changes in your own life and affect beautiful changes in the world. So thanks so much for being with us today, wherever you are. Have a blessed day, a blessed evening, and I look forward to next week and sharing my time and your time together. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.